Good morning. Sun is up. It's good to ride. Later on. This is a commercial. My task for this morning is to do three things. I'm not going to do a special number, but I'll try to do these three things today. Number one is, since we're talking about the missions, I was assigned to report, you know, what we did in scouting the Philippines, especially or particularly in the part of on the north side, which is the Pangasinan side. And later on, I will include some of the videos, video and some pictures for you to know and connect what I'm talking about. Second task, I'm going to preach on the book of Numbers that has connection on the trip that we just finished. The only difference is those guys, after 40 days, they made a report. We came back March 7. I think that's like more than 50 days, and this is the only time that we are making a report, but it's okay. Third and the last one, to encourage you why we need to do missions. That's my task for today, and I hope we'll be able to accomplish this. The title of the message is, as you could see, I don't know if it's in the video or it's there. Yeah, there you go. Okay. The 5 G's of mission, or the 5 G's in mission. When we hear the word 5 G's, most of the time we connect them to the internet, especially the speed, right? 5G's are faster than LTE. You guys know that? I just learned that when I did this. I don't really go into that. But that's what they said. But I'm not pertaining to that. Or I'm not pertaining about the money. You know, in the Philippines, we use 5Ks, right? When you say about 5,000, you use 5K. Here, we use 5G. Means 5 grand. You know that? No. Yeah, we use that, right? But I'm not going to use that. Instead, I'm going to use all those G's to talk about the missions. Guys, ready? Okay, let's go. And that's the first point. Go. Let's go. Okay? That's not a joke. That's the first point. So the first point in missions is the word go. If you look at the story, especially in chapter 13, starting verse 1, it begins by God saying to Moses to explore Canaan, which the land that he was promised a long time ago, back with Abraham. So the Lord promised them, I'm giving them to you. I'm giving them to the Israelites. So what he did in verses 14 to 16, Moses chose one in each tribe, representatives, to go. So they listed the names there in verses 4 to 16. That's where we could see it. And after that, they were commanded on what to do when they go there. So my question is, why God commanded them to spy the land? I believe God commanded them not to burden them. Even at this time, I don't believe that God is commanding us to go on missions to burden us. There are four things here that I would say God asked them to spy the land. One, to confirm that His promise with visible evidence. To confirm His promise with visible evidence. You know, God had already promised that Canaan was a good land. And by sending the spies, He allowed the Israelites to see how rich the land is. The fruits, how fertile, and the abundance of the fertility and abundance of the land. You know, it says in there the cluster of grapes from Eshcol was physical proof that the land truly flowed with milk and honey. Many times in scriptures or in the Bible, God always attaches signs or sometimes tokens and proofs to his promises. For example, in the life of Noah, he gave a rainbow. God didn't just say, you know, I will never destroy the earth by flood again. But he said, he is the sign of my covenant, a visible reminder, a public testimony, a permanent evidence. It's so sad now because, you know, other people are using this with the wrong sign. But if we look back, this is the sign of God that he will never destroy that. It's an evidence of God's promise to Noah or to us. With Moses, the signs that he gave, the burning bush. Before Moses confronted Pharaoh, God gave him visible evidence. A bush that burned but was not consumed. A rod that turned into a serpent. A hand that turned leprous and was healed. You know, God was simply saying or telling him, I will not send you without proof that I am with you. With Gideon, what did he give? The pleas. Gideon struggled with fear. We all know that. But God didn't rebuke him. Instead, God gave him evidence. Not just once, but twice. God gave him evidence. The early church in Mark 16:20 says, the Lord worked with them and confirmed his word with signs following. God didn't just send them to preach. He backed them up with visible results. It doesn't mean that God needed information why they sent these guys. The people did. We need that. They needed reassurance that the promise was real. Second thing, why God sent them to spy? To gather strategic information for entering the land. You know, I believe the mission also had a practical purposes. Moses, he has a background in military and in his capacity as a military leader, sought to accomplish several goods in sending the 12 spies into Canaan. He asked the spies to gather, you know, the intel about the following. He's telling them, if you go there, this is what you should look for. You look for whether the people who live there were strong or weak. If they are few or many, that's in Numbers 13:18. Look if the land was good or bad, that's in verse 19. Look for the cities where, like, if there's, you know, if they are fortified, if they are strong. Look for the land if they are rich or poor, that's in verse 20. Look if there's forest in there. This was military reconnaissance, preparing Israel for battles ahead. And God would fight for them. But they still had to act in faith and move forward. Three, I believe God sent them to spy the land to teach them that God's promises require participation. Even though God gave them the land, they still had to go and take it. You know, God promised this, but we cannot just like sit down and just wait. God promised his presence. God commanded us to go and make disciples. We cannot make disciples if we're just sitting down, right? We have to act on it. We have to do something about it. God gave a promise but expected participation. You know, before the spies ever stepped into Canaan, God had already declared, I am giving you the land. That's the promise. So the promise was settled. The outcome was guaranteed. The land was theirs. But God still told Moses, send men to explore the land. Why? Because God's promises are invitations, not automatic deliveries. God wanted Israel to see the land, walk the land, touch the land, and prepare to possess the land. The promise was God's part. The participation was Israel's part. God has promised us a lot of things, but we have to do our part. Fourth, to test Israel's faith and reveal their hearts. You know, we could learn later on the reports coming from the 10 spies and coming from the 2 spies. They have 2 different reports. I hope we won't ask Brother Romy to, you know, to make a report. He might give another report for what I'm saying. Please don't. So, you know, 2 groups. And I know you won't do that. but in here, to test Israel's faith and reveal their hearts, we could see, you know, the number one, the consequences, and the last part. Second, we could see the convictions before even going there, how convinced they were in doing what they're doing. We could see that. So again, last February, we went there. We did a mission trip, or a scouting, I would say. And we're given a chance to, you know, to know the people there, to meet some Christians, and to explore the land, not just in that barangay, but in the nearby barangays as well. And we're able to visit another town. And we're so obedient that, you know, we did that. I have some pictures in here and a video that you guys could see. And again, what I say. So you will know what I'm talking about. Can we see the pictures, please? Oh, yeah. Okay. We all know them. So what we did, the first one, like I said, we went not just, you know, to the land. We went to the mountains. That's behind the mountains, you could see. And we have more pictures later on. Thanks for Brother Romy and Sister Carla who helped us there. They're the one who paid us, who prepared our food. Next, please. There you go. I don't know. This one is, you know, it's a 100 island. I believe it's more on the north side of Pangasinan. That's the time when we had our break. But somehow we're able to share the gospel there, especially on the plaza at nighttime. That's one of the islands. So they have hundreds. One of the islands. It's... There you go. That's another activity you could do. That's the food you could buy in there. So, what do you mean, ew? That's so good, man. Okay. So, here's the one. Another thing. This is the school. I believe it's a high school. So, the budget that we allotted, it goes in with one of this. So, when we went there, we prepared just a snack for the kids. I think around 150 high schools with this. So this is the elementary school, as you could see in the picture. I think around 120. So the first day of activity that we had is with this one. The second was in the high school. Let's go. Yeah, we're just preparing the snacks for them. This one is in jail, as you know, says in the picture. We're not allowed to take pictures and videos, but I believe because of Brother Romy's connections, we're able to somehow, you know, get some videos on that. But we're not showing it here. You don't really need that. But just pray for those people. So those guys that we worship with and we share the gospel to them. You can see on the left side, those are the Bibles that we donated. So when we left, Brother Romy and his pastor went to the bookstore to buy this Bible and give it to these people. That's the preparation. We didn't only give them the Bibles, but we also handed out some food that they need. In that plastic bag, they can have noodles, coffee, sugar, canned goods that not only us, even the church mates or the people there in that church help us to prepare all of this. Yeah, those are the people who help us. They're happy because they eat after that, before they distribute it. Next one. I think it's a video. Oh, okay. We didn't see the... Yeah, we see grapes, but we didn't see giants because the third point is giants. We didn't see giants in the Philippines. We saw grapes. Okay. We didn't see the video, but there's one part in there. We went to, they call it Maliko. It's how this, it's like a crooked or like a curvy road, kind of zigzagging like that. So we went there and we're able to see God's creation. We're able to, you know, to minister to people there. Okay, so like I said, we went mountains, we went in the water, as you can see in the pictures, we went in the land, we went in the market to share the gospel. It means we use the word go. The difference between evangelism and missions is, we could do evangelism here, we could do evangelism with your neighbor, with your coworkers, with your relatives, with your friends. But doing missions is different. You have to go. You have to go out. And imagine if, you know, I don't think we have China Inland Mission. I don't think we have the Overseas Missionary Fellowship now if Hudson Taylor didn't go to China. Imagine that. I don't think we, you know, we're able to witness to African people if David Livingstone didn't go there. Imagine a shoemaker who went to India just to share the gospel by the name of William Carey. Imagine Adoniram Hudson. Those guys, and there's a lot of them, a lot of missionaries who spent their time doing the mission work. I was thinking, why don't we just send the money? You know, like, we don't need to go there. Let's just stay here. And let's just send the money. But God commanded us to go. And part of doing the missions in 5Gs, it's going. We have to go. Whether we go, again, we go to the Philippines, we go to Africa, we go to Timbuktu, we could go Iqaluit. We could go in Vancouver. We could go in Nova Scotia to share the gospel. That's number one, G. The second thing we could see in the missions is grapes. What does it mean, grapes? What I meant for this, I would say it's a mountaintop experience for them. They've seen not ordinary grapes. They've seen like huge grapes. They said it was heavy. You know, it needs two people to carry that, and they have to put it in a pole. They've seen ordinary grapes. Again, after doing the scouting for 40 days, in verse 26 to 27, it says, they came back to Moses and Aaron and the whole Israelites community at Kadesh in the desert of Paran. There they reported to them and the whole assembly and showed them that the fruit of the land. They gave Moses this account. We went into the land to which you sent us, and it does flow with milk and honey. And here is the fruit. Here is the grapes. You know, I believe the grapes signifies three things. Number one, I would say the grapes were evidence of God's faithfulness to them. They need that. Because later on, after the mountaintop experience, they will see giants. And you need that. You need that experience. Again, before the spies step into Canaan, God already declared, it's yours. It's a land flowing with milk and honey. Literally. The grapes were visible proof that God's promise was not exaggerated. This is not symbolic and this is not poetic. The grapes was real. It is real fruit. God said the land was good. The grapes prove it. God said the land was fruitful. The grapes confirmed it. God said the land was theirs. The grapes testified to it. God always provides evidence to strengthen faith before he requires action. You know, sometimes the evidence that God is giving us, and maybe we didn't notice, maybe a small breakthrough, a timely word from a friend, even from a stranger, a door opening to us, a confirmation in prayer, a provision that arrives just in time. And these are our grapes of God's way saying, I meant what I said. So the grapes were evidence of God's faithfulness. Second, the grapes were a preview of the future. The grapes were not the whole land. They were a sample of the land. Again, the grapes were not the whole land. They were a sample of the land. You know, God often gives us a taste before he gives us the territory. Joseph dreamed before he ruled. David was anointed before he was crowned. The disciples saw miracles before they performed them. Israel tasted grapes before they possessed Canaan. So the grapes were God's way of saying, if this is the fruit at the border, imagine the fruit in the corner. They were just in the border. They're not there yet. Your preview is not the promise. It is the proof of the promise. Third, I would say the grapes point to Jesus and the fruit of the Spirit. Just as the grapes were evidence of the land, the fruit of the Spirit is evidence of God's work in us. You know, we see that in Galatians chapter 5, verse 22. The love, the joy, the peace, the patience, kindness, the goodness, the faithfulness, the gentleness, the self-control. These are all point to Jesus and the fruit of the Spirit. The grapes in Numbers 13 that we have read were external fruit. The Spirit produces internal fruit in us. Both are signs that God is present and active. But you know what? In spite of the good things they found some bad things there. They find giants. And that's easy, right? Even someone will do a good things to us, even God. He did like 1,000 good things to us, or your friend, or your I know your partner. If there's one thing that bad thing they make or they made, we remember those, right? These guys have seen the land. These guys have experienced all the miracles that God did for them. But in spite of all those, they find the giants. They find the giants. Giants and the grasshopper. In verses 28 to 29, we could see that. It says, nevertheless, the people be strong that dwell in the land, and the cities are walled and very great. And moreover, we saw the children of Anak there. The Amalekites dwell in the land of the south, and the Hittites, and the Jebusites, and the Amorites dwell in the mountains, and the Canaanites dwell by the sea and at the coast of Jordan. You know, if you look at the word that they use in here, nevertheless, means despite of all that, he's just simply saying, you know, we went to the land, we found it good, and God's promises were true. And then they say, despite all this, despite God's faithful promise, the people are stronger who dwell in that land. Despite God's faithful promise, the cities are walled. We cannot penetrate that. And they are very great. Cannot do anything. Despite God's faithful promise, they saw the children of Anak or Anak, the giants who lives there. Despite God's faithful promise, the Amalekites dwell, the Hittites, the Jebusites, the Amorites, the Canaanites, all of them dwell in that land. And there are no vacancies. It's not for us. we cannot take that. It is hard to imagine a report more unbelieving and unfaithful to God than this. You know, a report that recognizes the faithfulness of God's promise, the truth of His word, and yet they said, nevertheless, nevertheless. I have options, you know. Like, I could make a report today and to convince you, you know, this is what we've experienced in the Philippines. Let's not go there. Let's not go back to Pangasinan. It's 3 hours away from Manila. So traffic. It's hot, especially if we go in March. There's a lot of obstacles. There's a lot of difficulties. I could make a report on that, but I won't focus on that. Because I believe every task, you know, that God has entrusted to us, there's always difficulties. There's always obstacles. There's people who will refuse to go. There's people who will, you know, say no. There's people who will oppose you. It's always like that. And what should we do? What should we do? They've seen not just the grapes. They saw the giants. And they stared with the giants. And there's consequences on that, as we could see. In Numbers 13, 31 to 33, but the man that went up with him said, not able to go against with these people, for they are stronger than we. And they brought up an evil report of the land, which they had searched unto the children of Israel, saying, the land to which we have gone to search it is a land that eateth up the inhabitants thereof, and all the people that we saw in it are men of great stature. And there we saw the giants, the sons of Anak, which come of the giants. And we were in our own sight as grasshoppers. And so we were in their sight. If you notice in verse 32, they were convinced that the land itself would consume them. That's how they look at this. They began to compare themselves against the enemy. They're saying, we are like a grasshoppers. We are too small. The thing in here is, the enemy didn't even say they're like grasshoppers. It came from them. That's their idea. They looked themselves that they were insignificant, invaluable. They're weak. We cannot do anything. Their unbelieving response, I would say, was a combination of truth, lies, and exaggeration. You know, fourth G in the missions, I would say, it's God. You know, after just seeing the giants, after seeing those grapes, after looking themselves as a grasshopper, I think it's so important that we have to see God in the midst of this. Or they need to see God in the midst of this. Numbers 13, when I look at this in Google, like all the sermons, is often preached as a story about the giants, about the grasshoppers, about fear, about intimidation. But you know, the deeper message is that God was in every part of the chapter. That's a good thing about that. And the tragedy is that the people saw everything except God. That's the tragedy. You know, if we don't see God in the midst of what we are going through, I think that's a tragedy. In sickness, job loss, or dying of a loved ones, if we don't see God in the midst of all those, that's so tragic. What do I mean by seeing God? Number one, we have to realize that God is in full control. He is in full control. He wasn't surprised, or he's not surprised, or doesn't surprise us that these things are happening to us. He is in control. Not just he is in control, he has a plan. God always has a plan for us. I don't know what, but I believe God has a plan why we have to go through this. God knows us well. God knows us well. Again, you know, before we went there, I don't really want to go. I don't really want to go. Why? Because I'm going through something. It's just like, it's going to be more burden on me if I'll go there. But I have to go. I think I only struggled 2 or 3 days. My first 2 and 3 days was the hardest when we were there. But after that, even going to Pangasinan, it was a relief. Before going there, I was thinking, oh, in the province, I know, the hospitals might be far. There's no pharmacies in there. If something happened to me, I might be dead on that place before even reaching the hospital, or even before buying the medicines that I need. I'm so worried about that. But I have to see all of this. I need to see God in that, that God has a plan. I believe the real issue was not the giants. It was how the Israelites viewed themselves. In Exodus 3:14, when we had the prayer meeting last Wednesday, Sister Ging gave us a piece of paper. And this is the same verse I'd received. When Moses is talking to God, when he was asking, Lord, if I'll go with Pharaoh, what will I say? Who should I introduce? And God said, tell him I am who I am. Say this to the people of Israel. I am the one who sent you. But Moses still in doubt. But when he was in doubt, God didn't build up Moses' self-esteem. But what God did, he reminded him of who he is. God was saying, it's not about who you are, it's about who I am. The focus is not on themselves, but on God. You need to see that. We need to see this. If God wants us to do these missions, there's a lot of obstacles. There's a lot of oppositions. But we need to see God in the midst of this. Number one, we need to see God in His promise. That's what it's called, a promised land. Because it was promised a long time ago for them. And this is the time for them to occupy the land. But they were in doubt. But it was promised a long time ago. The Lord already gave us in Matthew 28, go and make disciples. I am with you. I will be with you. That's His promise. The promise of His presence. He promised that a long time ago. All we need to do is to claim that. We need to do that. Again, before the spies ever left, God said He was giving the land to Israel. Again, this is not a suggestion or a possibility to get the land. It was a guaranteed promise. The people saw giants, but Caleb saw God's promises. Seeing God means remembering what He already said. Seeing God's promises, remembering what He already said. If you look at the book of Philippians, it wasn't about the time when He was in the palace or He was enjoying the day. he was inside the prison when he wrote that, Paul. But we could see a lot of promises of God in there. One is Philippians 1:6. He said, whatever good works he has done for us, he'll able to finish it. He will never leave us. He will finish it. That's for sure. Second, Philippians 4:13. We heard this a lot, or we've seen this a lot, and people using this in the wrong context. But during this time, Paul was in prison, and he's saying, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. That's his promise. We cannot do this on our own. God will able to give us the strength that we need. Philippians 4:19, my God shall supply all my needs according to his riches and glory. That's his promises. All we need to do is to claim that. Whatever we are going through, I don't know what you guys are going through, whether that's a task, whether it is trials, whether you are in triumph, we need to see God in all of this. Look at his promises. The land was promised a long time ago. We just need to claim that. Second, we need to see God in his presence. They all saw the same land, the same cities, the same people. And it can happen to us. We can hear the same message again and again, Sunday in, Sunday out. We can hear, you know, we could join a Bible study. We have the same leader, same teacher, Pastor Sani. We could all do that, but we will have a different reports or different response. Then 10 of them reported back saying, no, we can't. But Joshua and Caleb said, yes, we can. What did the two see that the 10 failed to see? Joshua and Caleb, they saw God in chapter 14, verse 9, when they said, God is with us. His presence is with us. They see God's presence, or they saw God's presence. They experience the presence of God. And this was not a blind faith. It had a weight of evidence behind it. They had not forgotten that God had been with his people in the past, giving them his promise, his protection, and his provision. And this was the guarantee that he would be with them in the future. The presence of God. God is with us. And the same is true for all of us. What God has done is the guarantee of what he will do. Paul puts it this way, Romans 8:32. He who did not spare his own son, but gave him up for us all, how will he not also, along with him, graciously give us all things? Brothers and sisters, Jesus has given us a great and unfinished commission to go and make disciples of all nations. And we may feel unequal to the task. But the same Jesus has pledged his very presence as we go. He gave us his word, I am with you, to the very end of the age. It's not about Brother Rome. It's not about me. It's not about Pastor Sani or the mission team. It is the presence of God. When David Livingstone, missionary in Africa, was asked what kept him in staying in Africa, one, it is love for the people. It's love for God. Third, it's God's presence. Because he knows, that God is with him. I believe that gives us the courage to do things for him if we know that we are not alone. He is with us. You might feel that you're all alone, but God is with us. Third, see God in his past faithfulness. Again, you know, it's so easy for us to forget all those good things that God has done. But sometimes we have to look back. Maybe we need to review what God has done for us. We don't deserve anything, but God forgave us. We don't deserve, you know, eternal life, but God gave it to us. Maybe we need to go back to that see God in His faithfulness. The five or the fifth G in this, I would say it's the gospel. I'm going to try to connect this. You know, when they are doing this, like the preparation, they, of course, they have to make a report or to give a report. I would say the way they look at things has something to do with their convictions. Or the way you say things has something to do with your convictions or your belief. They need that convictions before sharing the gospel to other people. That them has that. You know, you cannot offer anything that you don't have, right? You cannot say, you know what, in Boracay, it's so beautiful. One time, my professor was like asking the student, because the student kept on saying, you know what, it's so beautiful in this area, like in Boracay. So when he was asked, have you been there? Have you been to Boracay? No. How do you know it's beautiful? I saw pictures. You know, somebody's telling me it's beautiful. These guys, they have that. They experience that. They were convicted that what they're doing, it's from God. Because if not, I would say, number one, there should be consequences. If you make an evil report, if you lie about that, there's consequences. That's why when we go there, yes, it's good that we give away those Bibles, we give away those fruits, we give away those things, but we also have to present the gospel. And before we even do that, we have to make sure that we are convinced that what we are saying is true, and we are claiming that. The price of unbelief, that's the consequences. In 14:22-23, it says, none of those who have seen my glory and the signs I performed will ever see the land I swore to give. You know, the consequences was so devastating. The generation that saw miracle after miracle, from the plagues of Egypt to the parting of the Red Sea, from manna in the desert to water from a rock, would never step foot in the land of promise. Not because God was unfaithful, but because they were unwilling to believe. Their unbelief didn't just delay them. It defined them. They became a people marked by fear, not faith, a cautionary tale for generations to come. The Israelites had the fruit in their hands, but fear in their hearts. They rejected not just a place, but a person, the very God who had proven himself time and time again. And the weight of that rejection closed the door on their future. This was not punishment out of anger, but consequence born from grief. God longed to bless them, to lead them into something better, but he could not bless a people who are unwilling to trust him. Unbelief always comes at a cost. It blinds us to what God had already done. It causes us to retreat when we're meant to advance. It turns divine opportunities into missed moments. In 14:28-29 in the book of Numbers. Now tell them this, as surely as I live, declares the Lord, I will do to you the very things I heard you say. You will all drop dead in this wilderness because you complain against me. Every one of you who is 20 years old or older and was included in the registration will die. Imagine the consequences. Because of unbelief, 20 years old or older will die because of their unbelief. In Numbers 14:34-35, according to the number of the days in which you spied out the land, 40 days, for each day you shall bear your guilt 1 year, namely 40 years, and you shall know my rejection. I, the Lord, have spoken this. I will surely do so to all this evil congregation who are gathered together against me in this wilderness. They shall be consumed, and there they shall die. In 14:37-38, the man who brought up a bad report of the land, 10 of them, died by plague before the Lord. of those men who went to spy out the land. Only Joshua, the son of Nun, and Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, remain alive. So we have to be careful in that because there's consequences. Second, in the gospel, like I said, the convictions. We need to have that. Numbers 13:30, Caleb said, "Let's go up now and take possession of the land because we can certainly conquer it." The response wasn't naive optimism. It was spiritual conviction. They saw the same giants, the same fortified cities, the same overwhelming odds, yet they came to a radically different conclusion. Why? Because their vision was filtered through faith, not fear. While others saw themselves as a grasshopper or grasshoppers, Joshua and Caleb saw themselves as God's chosen people, backed by the might and promise of God. They understood a crucial truth. When God is with you, it doesn't matter who or what stands against you. God is with you. Their courage wasn't rooted in their ability to fight, but in their certainty that God had already spoken. If He said the land was theirs, then it didn't matter how tall the walls were or how skilled the warriors looked. Victory was already decided. All they had to do was step forward in faith. True courage is not the absence of fear, but the presence of unwavering faith in the face of it. Joshua and Caleb became warriors, not only of the fruit, but of conviction, clarity, and confidence. In a moment when the community needed faith the most, they chose to believe that the God who brought them out of Egypt would surely bring them into the promise. Faith doesn't ignore the facts. It magnifies God over them. In Joshua chapter 14, we could see that. They were commended and rewarded, Caleb and Joshua. I'm not saying, this is prosperity, that God will give you more years. But on that time, God blessed them. Joshua was saying, "I was only 40 years old when we do the scouting. Now I am 85 years old, 45 years later. I'm still strong as back then." And they based that on their convictions. They did that because they're convinced that God can do this. There's a lot of things, a lot of activities, a lot of work has to be done. There will be giants in that, but there is also God in that. It's all up to us if we look on giants or we look onto God to accomplish things that He wants to be accomplished. Let us pray.
The Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord lift His countenance upon you
and give you peace.
And give you peace.
And give you peace.
And give you peace.
The Lord
make His face to shine upon you.